Right, good afternoon. The Commission on Equitable Housing Development meeting has now commenced. It's July 7th at 4 p.m. This meeting is being held virtually due to COVID-19 to allow for social distancing and protect the public health. As we continue to our efforts in meeting remotely, we ask all commissioners and guests to mute yourselves until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in using a call-in number to unmute to speak, dial *6 on your phone. Also, prior to speaking, please announce who you are to identify yourself. As a reminder, this meeting is being recorded. We ask that you only use a chat function to request to speak or to announce you are leaving the meeting so that we can track quorum. Also, in order to comply with the state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by way of roll call using audio, not by using the chat function. So we'll do roll call. Michael Edmonds.
I am present.
Olga Flores is absent. Sharia Jimenez. I just texted Shay. So she is currently absent. Jim Toffel, I'm present. Liz Wilshin.
I'm here, present.
Jay Young.
Here.
Mindy Bernstein.
Present.
Lori Mazurbo.
Present.
And Joanna Carr.
Present.
Great. Kinbriana Washington. All right, Kinbriana is also absent.
Jim Shiraya joined the meeting.
Oh, Shay's on?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just joined, Jim. Sorry.
Hey, okay. So we've got two missing members. Ex officio Maggie Amato-Tayez.
Present.
Wendy Asher.
Present.
Marianne Bierling.
Hello.
Mark Clark.
Present.
Vicky Casino.
I'm here.
Marcos Ismail.
I'm here.
Betty Villegas. Okay, Betty's out. Corn Manning. And Liz Morales.
Present.
Okay.
Corn's coming in.
Okay. All right, Corin is now with us. Okay, so second agenda item is the review and adoption of both the May 5th and June 2nd meeting minutes. These are posted on our website. I do have one minor change I'm almost embarrassed to bring up. On agenda item number 3 for both, it says that I'm the vice chair. So it's a technicality.
That must mean I'm the chair, right, Jim?
Yep. You want to be the chair? any other changes that anybody sees to the meeting minutes? Okay, hearing none, without objection, the minutes are approved.
Jim?
Yes.
I don't believe I was present in June.
Oh.
And I'm not shown as present or missing.
May.
Small technicality.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, so okay, Nesto, can you make those changes?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Without objection, then, with those two changes, the meeting minutes are approved. Okay. The third agenda item is the call to audience. This is the time when any member of the public may address the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development. Due to time constraints, the total time allocated for this is 15 minutes. Individuals are allowed up to 3 minutes each. Due to open meeting law, commission members cannot discuss topics that are not on the agenda. Items brought up by the public may be considered as an agenda item for a future meeting. Joe, go ahead. You have the floor.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I know this isn't a place for a discussion about anything, and I want to bring up one off-topic thing, and that was just a request for city staff and maybe for the chairs of our subcommittees as well. When we're having Zoom meetings, if you notice there's nobody from the public in your meeting, it's certainly possible that everybody's lost interest in you or you're having a meeting at a time where people can't make. But consider the possibility that perhaps something in how the meeting was presented was inaccurate, whether that be a Zoom link or a meeting number or something like that, because I think that has happened. And I'm not here to call the attorney general, not the open meeting police, but if we could consider that and just be sure we verify that public is able to access these meetings and all the subcommittee meetings, that'd be great. Thank you. That is all.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. Any other comments or questions or thoughts? Mindy?
Joe, I'm not calling you out. I am wondering if you have any ideas on how we could better advertise or let people know about the this meeting. Have you thought of?
I'm not sure if we're allowed to have discussion of this on call to the audience. Or if I'm breaking the rules, I don't know. I think having the agendas and links on the commission website is a good one. If I have to go to the city's board and commission's page, that's an extra step. Mainly, I want to make sure that when you give the Zoom link, that Zoom link works.
Okay, noted. We'll look into that. Any other comments? Yes.
Are you calling on me, Jim?
Oh, hey, Vicky. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Just a note that with any announcements about the meetings, it should have a statement about how to request any types of reasonable accommodations, preferably not with that language, but you know, in more general language about any type of language or other assistance.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, let's move on to agenda item number 4. We're going to talk about the sunset and converting sunset of the initial commission, extending it and converting our ex officio members to voting members. So Ernesto.
Thank you, Jim. So HCD has forwarded to the city council, which we'll take up on Tuesday, these two requests. One is the extension of the sunset for the commission. The commission, the life of the commission expires this month. Not to be too worried about it, folks. HCD is asking for a 4-year extension. In addition, we're asking to ask mayor and council approval to convert the non-governmental ex officio members to full voting members of the commission. So that they can obviously vote and more fully engage and participate in the full meetings as well as the subcommittee meetings.
Nesto, do you need any of us to do anything? I mean, do you need any of us to speak on the behalf during the call to audience or anything like that?
That I don't know. Liz, do you know that is necessary?
They're all in person now. So if anyone wants to come down and just be there, I'm happy to share with the mayor if we have any commission members there so that they can acknowledge you all. But I think it'll go off without a hitch, but please feel free. If you do want to make comments during the call to audience, I think that would be great too. So I would encourage you all to be engaged and be present.
Okay. Is there still time for committee members to write to the city clerk's office a statement of support? That would be in the question of extension.
So I'm just looking up the meeting here. The next meeting, it's on Tuesday, the 12th at 5:30 p.m. in the council chambers. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Any questions for Ernesto? All right. Thank you, Nesto. I'm excited to get these changes made. Let's see, I'm just making a note to myself to go to this meeting. Okay, next agenda item is agenda item number 5, the subcommittee updates. First subcommittee is housing segregation. So Jay, you've got the floor.
Hi, everybody. I will keep this very short because most of what we have been working on is under the next agenda item, 6A, and then also a lot of what we have talked about in the past couple of meetings is also then under agenda item number 7. So I'll just wait until then and have the conversation at that time.
Okay, any comments or questions for Jay? Okay, housing first. Liz Wilson.
So at our last meeting, we did review the goals and mission statement. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen to show the goals and mission statement that we reviewed. So this is something that first came up as a topic in June of 2021, and then it passed in February of 2022. It established our mission, and then initially it was just brought up because it says that our goals are the former subcommittee name, and because the subcommittee name has changed, as well as some of the topics have changed, we did revise our goals, and I'm going to go ahead and share with y'all what we revised our goals to include. So a mission was brought forth and passed. It did include these goals. Can y'all see the Microsoft Word doc?
Yep.
Okay. So these goals specifically were what passed, and it includes to review and evaluate the shelter to housing to home experiences of program participants through shared lived experience and quantitative metrics, participate and leverage relationships with City of Tucson HCD programs by receiving recommendations and reviewing emergent data and studies, and finally to provide recommendations on equitable policies to increase and accelerate available rental housing. So we wanted to bring this motion forth to the commission to see if any additional input was there and if we could go ahead and make a formal revision of the Housing First goals.
So So do you want to have a discussion and then put it to vote?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. I mean, this seems great to me. So review and evaluate shelter to housing to home experiences of program participants and quantitative metrics. So do you want to jump into each of these and kind of explain a little bit more what you're thinking?
Yeah. Absolutely. So early on in the subcommittee meeting, we had discussed that there is a continuum of care that people engage in when they go through what's called coordinated entry systems, which is when someone gets screened into housing based on their level of vulnerability and need. And the typical trajectory of someone who is literally on the street typically goes anywhere from shelter to housing to something like a home or an actual home when they're in the housing first model. Obviously, people can be in that continuum. They can enter at a different point and they can also exit and reenter at different points. But the goal of this goal, we want to have a carved out space for program participants on our agenda every single meeting to be sure that they're sharing their experiences with the programs. I've contacted a couple of people with these contracts, as well as some people in HCD. And if anyone wants that email, I'm happy to send it their way if they know people who are program participants. And then additionally, just reviewing, like doing a quantitative review of how those programs are doing and what the continuum looks like in our community. And then using the relationships that we have with HCD staff and the programs that they contract out by getting those recommendations, reviewing any new data or studies they may have. There was mention in a recent meeting of opportunity for us to participate in the next PCHIP as well. And then to provide any recommendation from the information we're able to distill to include equitable policies that increase and accelerate available rental housing.
Sounds great. Does anybody have a question or thought?
I'd love to make a motion for the commission to approve the revision of the Housing First Subcommittee goals and to strike the Permanent and Supportive Housing Subcommittee from the prior or from the future, any future references.
Okay. So a motion's been made. Is there a second?
I will second.
Thank you, Michael. So before I call the question, any discussions or thoughts on these recommended changes?
Hey, Jim, this is Jason Thorpe with the department. I just wanted to share with the group related to the second recommendation of the bullet point, or no, I'm sorry, the where it is, the in emergency shelter to permanent supportive housing, where I saw it just a moment ago. Oh, okay, sorry, it's relationship with COT, it's the third line. People here, piece here being, this is data that we have readily available in data visualization form. And so we, you know, I think any one of the reps from the Planning Community Development Division is happy to join the subcommittee in a meeting at their invite. And we're happy to share that data, but that could be shared today. It's available, just hasn't been passed along to the commission.
Great. Any other comments or thoughts before we call the question? Okay, so let's put it to vote. Michael Edmonds.
Aye.
Sharia Jimenez.
Aye.
Liz Wilshin.
Aye.
Jay Young.
Aye.
Mindy Bernstein.
Aye.
Lori Mazurbo.
Aye.
And Joanna Carr.
Aye.
Okay, the ayes have it. Is Ken Brianna with us yet? Don't want to overlook anybody. Doesn't look like it.
No,
okay.
I believe not.
Yeah. All right, great. Thank you, Liz. That was great. So next committee update is the affordable housing. So Sharia, you have the floor.
I'm wondering too, is there a Megason on the line? Okay, I might also ask for your help because you were a large piece of this last meeting as well. But I have the notes here in front of me. So we moved, Sarah presented for most of our meetings. She helped us synthesize our goals and action items for next steps. So we kind of reduced it to 4 goals, which are listed here in the agenda. We talked about reinstating the housing trust fund and developing more permanent and sustainable revenue sources for that fund, and that we would be the committee that oversees that funding. We talked about this as a first goal as opposed to going straight to the bond, because the general, trying to start working on a general obligation bond, just because this seems like an easier, well, first we have to have this in place to have, we need somewhere for the money to go. So this would be the place that the money goes. So that's partly why Sarah was recommending that we do this as a first step before we go after trying to figure out what a general obligation bond could look like. And then the next step is that the next recommendation we have is that we direct Mayor and Council to initiate a UDC audit, which is our zoning code, and improve all barriers to the development of the housing continuum through the equity lens. I think this also pairs kind of nice with, or could pair nice with what Jay has been asking for, which is just also for us to further define the equity lens. And then the other goal we have here is for the city to, and with this UDC audit, it seems from what we were updated from Sarah, I think the city has plans to do this anyways. So again, I think it's just going to be in alignment with what they're doing. But I think, again, we could be pushing more for that equity lens. And then we're also recommending that the city develop a citywide affordable housing development incentive program, which would have a menu of options for zoning incentives, including density bonuses and in lieu fees. We had quite a bit of discussion about what that means, those in lieu fees, but it's basically that if this is an optional program and that if for some reason people wanted to use this program but not do affordable housing, they could have access these incentives but would have to pay a fee. And that fee would then go to fund our affordable housing projects. So, and a lot of cities have similar programs set up that way. And then the last recommendation we have is for city staff to look at and begin implementation of an affordable housing permitting fast track process. And does anyone else want to add any more, Sarah or Jim?
Sorry, I was on mute. We're going to be talking about these items here in about 30 minutes, because I think the commission, it has to vote on the recommendations that we want to make to Mayor and Council. So we're going to talk about each of these in more depth, but I think that's a good overview.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. So any questions for Shay?
I see Mindy, you have your hand up.
She's clapping.
Thank you.
Okay, so agenda item number 6 is a Amelia?
Hi, I'm from the public. Am I allowed to ask a question?
Technically, no, but go ahead and make it quick.
Oh, I was just wondering what constitutes as affordable housing.
Jim,
do you mind if I take this one real quick and just refer to the link on our shared language on the EHD website? Okay. So I'm going to put a link in the chat, and it has all of our shared language for your reference. Amazing. And anyone.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Liz. Okay. Any other comments or questions on the subcommittee updates? Okay, so discussion on action items. This is where we're going to dive into the segregation housing subcommittee action items and the affordable housing subcommittee action items with recommendations and proposals to go back to mayor and council. So the first one is the housing segregation, and we're going to hand it back to Jay to lead that discussion.
Thanks, Joan. So I think what we intended here as a subcommittee was to potentially have this be more of a discussion time, try and give everybody some context of what we've been thinking about. But y'all may remember back in, I don't know, March or April, we as a subcommittee came to the full commission with this idea of measuring equity, establishing a baseline, measuring equity, and then being able to see how we're progressing in terms of making the city more equitable. And the idea here is that as a commission and really as a city, I don't think that we have a baseline of where the city of Tucson stands in terms of how equitable it is or not. Obviously, we're focusing on housing as a commission, but, housing equity goes into so many other aspects of all of our lives, whether it be healthcare, transportation, education, you name it, right? So how are we doing as a city, actually, in terms of equity? And I think, any discussion of equity really also has as a key component race and ethnicity, disability, those types of things, and really looking at those issues more deeply, because a lot of the equity issues we have are a result of racist policies from all levels of government, as well as from the private sector, particularly in the 20th century. And so I guess the idea here is that we're not exactly sure what measuring equity looks like or how to establish a baseline. So what we keep kind of throwing around is asking the city or mayor and council, we don't know exactly who, to actually do some sort of study. But, maybe a study isn't the right way to go. I mean, studies can be good, but we all know that sometimes they sit on the shelf and get lost and aren't necessarily super helpful. But that's kind of the framework that we have. I don't know, just to give a little bit more context, I've been doing some research, and it's relatively easy, right? You can just Google housing equity indicators or, things like that. And there are a number of resources online. So, just as a couple of examples, there is a report that a number of cities did before 2016, for the most part, that are called assessments of fair housing that really take a deep dive into equity and fair housing issues, which are very closely related, and do have a lot of community participation. So again, establishing a baseline for equity. There's one that the city of Dallas spearheaded. It's called the North Texas Regional Assessment of Fair Housing. And I actually have a Word document that I put together that's got about 10 different resources that I would be happy to share. There is the city of Seattle, for instance, has a online mapping project, essentially, where you can open up the map and click on different census tracts, and it shows you where each census tract ranks in terms of advantage or disadvantage. So you can think about that as, you know, access to opportunity as well. You know, and a lot of different indicators there. And again, obviously, this is very surface level. I know you guys aren't looking at it, but just to give you all an idea of kind of what's out there. There's a website called equityindicators.org. And I'm looking at housing in New York City. And it shows, gives different scores for different categories. So in terms of homelessness, for instance, it shows age and homelessness, age and length of stay in a shelter, under affordability of housing, race and severe rent burden, race and home purchase loan denial, and quality of housing, public housing and murder is one, income and vermin infestation, and the list goes on. But it gives a score. And then from year to year, it gives a change score. So it's measuring from year to year whether or not equity is improving based on those different indicators. And then just one more that I'll point out that does a similar thing. St. Louis, Missouri measures equity. Their focus on housing is called neighborhoods. But out of 100, for instance, they give themselves, the city of St. Louis, an equity score of 48.25 out of 100. And then it talks about, you know, the rationale behind that score and shows more information. So this is a doable thing. It's something that a lot of cities are doing. And again, to kind of wrap that up, the context there, you know, the idea again is, where do we stand as a city in terms of equity, particularly housing? And then from there, what are we doing? What is being done to address equity? And then measuring equity over time. And at this point, you know, I don't think the city is really doing anything like that. But I would also point out that, you know, there are a lot of things that the city is doing, the HASP plan, just as an example, that does deal with equity. So, you know, also, I think having more information in one location could be helpful. Like, what is the city doing currently to address equity? But again, I don't really think that that addresses where we're starting from and kind of this common indicator or common language to move forward from and measure. So that's basically in a nutshell where we are as a subcommittee and what we are bringing to the full commission to see if this resonates, one, and two, if it does, what is it that we're asking for in order to move this item forward? So with that, I don't know if anybody has any questions. I'm happy to do my best to answer. Also want to see if my fellow subcommittee members have anything to add. But with that, I will take any questions and open it up for discussion.
All right, Liz.
Jay, this is awesome. I'm really excited to see that y'all are discussing this. I think that, like you mentioned, I don't think that there's necessarily a shortage of data, but maybe a shortage of aggregating the indicator points that we want to use to review that data. And so I think it might be a good step forward to determine, like, what are those indicators that determine equity? And from there, my other question really is this going to be a point in time analysis where it's just one specific date or year, or is it going to be a review of trends and patterns over a set period of time? Because I think those are two things that are really going to determine those next steps.
Yeah, and I mean, this is exactly why we wanted to have the discussion, because I think we don't know exactly, right? I mean, we're not necessarily the experts in this field and aren't exactly sure what a study would look like, but I think, you know, your point is well taken. I mean, I think this would be something that would, you know, maybe start at a point in time, but then, you know, moving forward, continuously measuring equity as projects are undertaken and progress is made, or, you know, we take steps back.
I do think there's some data out there. 2 years ago, when the Arizona Housing Coalition ran their Healthy Communities Conference up in Mesa. They spent quite a bit of time talking about this housing equity issue. And, you know, the thing that stuck out to me that was a little eye-opening, because, you know, if you've done a house loan, you know, they always ask you what your race is. And, you know, so I've never really thought about why are they asking that, but it's because certain races have better interest rates than others. So it's a built-in, change. And so I think, you know, when Jay and I were talking about this before, you know, we know some of these things are out there, but how do you even define, you know, we were trying to solve a problem, but how do you even define the problem? And how do we know how big the problem is and to solve? And I think that's really the question here that we're trying to get down to is doing a better job defining the problem so that we can have recommendations on potential solutions. They're targeted for a specific problem that we can quantify.
Well, and Jim, I think you bring up a good point and, you know, a specific issue. I mean, there has been a study within the past 3 or 4 years that shows that similarly situated African-American borrowers are 3 times more likely to be denied a home mortgage loan as compared to similarly situated white folks. And that's nationally, but I don't think, again, we have an understanding here of, you know, how are loans being given out, or, you know, how is that breaking down on racial and ethnic lines? And what if anything are we doing about that? Because, you know, if we're talking about equity and homeownership and, you know, racist housing policies, if we still have a city where, you know, just essentially based on your race or ethnicity, you're much less likely to be able to get a mortgage, that's a problem. And there are things that can be done to address those issues. It's just, I think that we don't focus on it. Most people don't know about it, and therefore we don't really do anything about it. But, you know, the city of Tucson could hold banks accountable. I mean, if a bank was found to be, you know, lending in particular areas and not others and denying people loans at higher rates than others, then, you know, the city could theoretically not bank with them, or say if you're going to operate in the city that, you know, we expect better. So, I mean, again, there are a lot of things that can be done, I think, to address equity issues, but, you know, where's that information? Is it aggregated somewhere? So I'm probably repeating myself at this point, but.
So do we need to, as Liz brought up, do we need to further drill down what we want this study to be, or do we want to leave it kind of loosey-goosey for now? And I guess the other question I had is this something that we should be working with Larice Walker's office on, or is this something that would be done through HCD?
Well, I guess what I think, Jim, is, you know, again, I'm just thinking out loud here, but I would love to know from, you know, experts that, you know, we have at HCD and throughout the city, you know, based on this kind of general broad request and some of the resources that I've pulled together that other cities are doing, I would love for, you know, city staff to come back and say maybe what could be possible, what's not possible. I mean, you know, I think the other thing that I keep thinking about is, well, who would do this work, right? I mean, we know that HCD is up to its eyeballs and, you know, capacity is always an issue. Money's an issue. You know, before, I guess I just want to be sensitive, and I think the subcommittee wants to be sensitive to, you know, not putting an ask out there that's really going to, one, not be possible or not be able to get done. We certainly don't want to overburden HCD staff. So, you know, from staff's perspective, what could be done, and what's, you know, how could we do some of this work in a way that makes sense? I mean, if we need to go to mayor and council and ask for more money, then maybe we do that. Or so I guess I feel like there's still a lot of information that we as a commission need to know before we come up with a recommendation. And certainly one of the things that I could do is just share the, it's just a Word document with links on it that I put together so that folks on the commission could become more familiar with what's out there. Just, you know, in 30 minutes or an hour, I think most folks would get a pretty good idea of what, you know, what I'm talking about and what's possible.
Liz Morales.
Liz M. and Liz W. So I totally am a big supporter of this this idea recommendation, and I do appreciate Jay kind of where, you know, where can we as city staff engage in this? And I have to say it's nice when other people do the research on our behalf and then makes our life easier. So I'm happy to spend some time with our team and read these links and information and come back with maybe some, you know, what can we do? Where are we maybe, you know, where can't we do, or as far as where are we limited? And then maybe that would help formulate recommendations. But we can certainly get back to all of you by the next meeting as far as an analysis of this work, as far as our capacity. And again, I think I know we want to do this. The question is who, as I think is the question, and how do we do it? As far as if it's not city staff, you know, what other options do we have? So thank you for this work, Jay.
And maybe it really does make sense, you know, on the one hand, you know, being sensitive to, you know, staff's capacity, we certainly need to do that. But on the other hand, I don't want to be limited by that if that's, you know, going to be a limitation. So maybe one of the things we think about as a commission, maybe when we get together next meeting or the meeting after, is, you know, do we need to go to mayor and council and say, hey, you need to fund this because HCD staff, you know, or city staff doesn't have the capacity. So, you know, on the one hand, let's be sensitive, but on the other, let's not be limited by what things are like today.
Does it make sense to have a follow-up discussion with Lori's Walker to see if this is something that she feels like they've got the capability to take on? And I know she's still getting her feet under her. She's with the City of Tucson Equity Office.
So if I can respond in that, and just that we will absolutely involve her. She is, I know, going to have a team, and again, not sure how she's going to use her team, but they could be, you know, potential resources and support on this work. So, you know, I agree, if, you know, my hope and goal is that we could do a lot of it, but let's look and see what our resources are. Again, the commission has been super helpful on these type of things. And so what else, you know, what work can we do, and then have the commission also help us engage in this work too?
So I'd love to share the couple of resources that I put together. I shared some in the chat, but I've got probably like maybe a half a dozen more on a Word document. Like I said, what's the best way to get that out to the world, whoever it is that needs to be seeing it? Can I email it to Jim or Neto?
Yeah.
Post it on the website.
Ernesto. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. Send it to me and a copy to Jim.
Okay.
Please. Thank you.
So I guess the action item at this point really is just to request that the commission members, you know, look at the resources, try and familiarize yourself with it, and have an agenda item on the next meeting as well for future discussion or more discussion on the next steps.
Go ahead, Mindy.
Thank you. The links that are posted in chat, do those get posted in the commission website with these meetings? Did I ask the question properly?
Well, yeah, and that's what I was asking as well, because I just pulled these off of the list that I have. So I want to get that full list out to, I'll get it to Neto and Jim, and then I think from there it'll go up on our commission website, at least what I understood. Is that right?
Otherwise, I guess take a photograph.
No, we'll get them up on the website.
Great.
Thank you.
So unless there are any other thoughts, questions, whatever, discussion, I think that that covers it for what the Housing Segregation Subcommittee was wanting to bring to the commission.
Okay, any other comments, thoughts from the commission members?
I just want to say, I'm sorry, I got kicked off out of the Zoom then. I had some internet issues. So, Jay, you know that the coalition, we do a lot of equity work. So if there's any way I can be helpful, either joining the subcommittee or whatever, just let me know.
We'd love to have you on the subcommittee anytime. Yeah. Come on by.
Okay. I'll be happy to join.
Hey, Joanna, if you are there publications that the housing coalition has that have statewide data? It's maybe not specific to Tucson, but is to Arizona.
We don't have any publications specifically with statewide data. There are statewide data resources, certainly, that we can kind of pull together. So, yeah, you know, HMIS, there's work being done on eviction data. There's work being done by the Morrison Institute around data. So, yeah, the data sources do exist, but no specific report, I guess, as of yet. We are trying to develop a race equity page specifically for the coalition website, and we'll be building more resources to that. So it's certainly something that we're working on, and I can see how we can probably align.
That's great. Thank you. Okay, any other comments or thoughts? Okay, well, thank you, Jay. I think this is good. This is going to be a standing item on our agenda going forward as we fine-tune what the ask is from Mayor and Council. So next half of this agenda, item number 6, is on the affordable housing side. 1, 2, 3, 4. There are 5 recommendations that the Housing Subcommittee would like to make to Mayor and Council. And I think it would make sense for us to just kind of touch on each one. If there's questions or comments or thoughts, let's go, as opposed to just jumping all over the place, let's try to go through these one at a time. And then we can summarize and vote for them on the end. Does that sound like a good plan, Shay?
Yeah, I like that.
Do you want to lead this or do you want me to lead this?
No. Okay, I will. Yes.
You don't want to lead it?
No, I don't feel prepared today. Thank you.
Okay, well, I expect you to chime in here. So
I will.
Okay. Okay, so the first item, everybody has the agenda, correct? Okay, so the first item is to reinstate the Housing Trust Fund as a sustainable revenue source for funding affordable housing in Arizona. The reason this is important is, as we've talked about in the past, the lion's share of affordable housing projects come through the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program. And that is a federal tax credit that's managed by the state, the Arizona Department of Housing. And there's a 9% and a 4% track for affordable housing. And the 9% is where most of the affordable housing comes through. And it's a competitive process. And the way that the process works now is that the more that a city can contribute, the more you can leverage those tax credit dollars with other funding sources, the higher the probability of an award, the higher the project will score. And if you, it's, you know, they just rank the scores basically. So based on what the city had last year, it was unlikely that the city was going to get more than one project. And if we could get some other funding sources that are recurring, where we could maximize the points on 2 or 3 projects, that would go a long ways towards ensuring that we get our fair share down here. So, you know, the key to this one is how is the housing trust fund going to get funded each year? Is it going to come straight out of the general fund, or is there some way to earmark something for it so that we know it's going to continue in perpetuity? So I guess with that, I'd like to open it up for comments. Liz?
I don't understand this. So I'm going to restate what I think I understood you said, and please tell me where the gaps are. So the housing trust fund is no longer in effect, and the question is whether the source will be from the state or from somewhere within the city or county.
Not exactly. So the housing trust fund does exist. Liz, correct, Morales, is it $500,000 right now each year?
I'm happy to jump in here, Liz. It's around $250,000, but the policies and committee that guided the housing trust fund are outdated. And so we're not going to spend a penny of that until there's clear policies and procedures on how it can be spent, but there's no longer a funding source to create additional revenue in that fund.
Jay?
What does it mean exactly that the commission would oversee? We would decide how money's spent? What exactly does that mean? And then I guess.
I think that should be HCD will oversee it, not CEHD. That's an error.
Got it. I was like, that's a lot for us, but.
Yes.
Actually, I jump in here, because I do think there's a oversight role of that was being recommended for CHD to oversee. And it's not like deciding who gets funded, but maybe the policies of how what type of activities, but I'm going to ask Anne to jump in, or Shay, on this.
Yeah, and Marcos, I see on here too. So I know the way the county does it is that actually they do, the committee, housing commission does oversee the general bond funds. So when those come through, they were the ones deciding which projects were awarded and which weren't. But I don't know that we want, again, I'm not sure how we would structure ours, but I'm sure Marcos can speak to that and others.
I would have to recuse myself from a lot of that discussion because of conflicts of interest if we are in the position where we have to decide which projects receive awards. Marcos?
Thank you. When we had bond funds, the County Housing Commission was charged with collecting applications, our department, you know, assisted and did all the legwork. And basically the Housing Commission was making recommendations for the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors would then have the final say or vote on with regards to funding a project. But we did rely on the Housing Commission to make recommendations. Staff provided a lot of support with regards to the RFP process, developing the applications, and then you know, helping to schedule meetings with a subcommittee. And that was the other thing. There was a subcommittee that was formed to review an application when one was received. And so so for what it's worth, that's the process that the county was using. And I think it was kind of similar to the process the former City Housing Commission and their role in overseeing those funds, I think was somewhat similar process.
Jay, did you have another comment?
I did. I meant to take my hand down, but I think Maggie was before me.
Okay, go ahead, Maggie.
Thank you. So, Jim, you premised that discussion with the LIHTC projects, but the Housing Trust Fund isn't always just for LIHTC projects, right? It's for different types of affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
Will our proposal be a little bit more general as for like affordable housing? I understand the importance in ranking and getting points for the LIHTC projects, but would we be able to use these funds for affordable home ownership or other types of housing development?
I believe so. It's one of those things where, you know, it's almost guaranteed that if it's just for LIHTC, there's funds that are not going to get used, because the city can say, okay, we're going to select XYZ projects to receive Housing Trust Fund funding, and then those projects may not receive the tax credit award, which is going to provide the lion's share of it. So what happens with those funds if they don't get used in LIHTC? So by definition, there's going to be funds either returned or where there's not an award made, and there has to be other ways of using that money besides LIHTC. That's my personal opinion. But I mean, I think we can define how we think it should. What I'm hearing from Liz and Anne is that we've got some flexibility here in terms of defining how we think that those funds should be used if we can get them. So, yeah. Okay, Jay.
Yeah, maybe this is down the road a little bit, but you know, you did mention where the money would come from. You know, is that something we want to talk about now? I mean, I think this is a great idea, and I think, you know, we really need to pressure wherever we can to get money into a housing trust fund or something of that nature. I mean, I just, when I think about the fact that the city passed, what was it, the $700 billion bond for roads, it sailed through, no big deal. You know, that really tells you where our priorities are. So, you know, I think a bond issue would be great. I mean, we really need a lot of money. And if the trust fund is the place for that to go, then this is, I think, a wonderful proposal. And the other thing I would say, too, is it sounds like in terms of the oversight, maybe it's similar to what the city's planning commission does, which I'm also on. It's, you know, things are presented to the planning commission, their public hearings, and, you know, the planning commission ends up making recommendations to mayor and council that they may or may not take. But, you know, I do think that they have quite a bit of weight with mayor and council. So maybe that's kind of what we're talking about here as well.
So I would just like to ask the question, does anybody have any thoughts or suggestions on how, if there was a recurring housing trust fund that could be established for Tucson, how that could get funded each year? So I'll start with Marcos and then Liz.
Yes. So, you know, there are a lot of things, unfortunately, that have been preempted by the state, but, you know, and I think a lot of it depends on the city's charter and what statutes the city has to follow under the Arizona revised statutes. But we learned a couple of things, you know, when we were trying to get the County Housing Trust Fund going. And, you know, one of the first ones was that general obligation bond funds cannot be used as a funding source for a housing trust fund. So you have to identify something else, like maybe a real estate transfer tax, which is, you know, not really possible here, but that's been popular in other jurisdictions and other states where it hasn't been preempted. But I think the city could, you know, look at sales taxes, maybe instituting an extra quarter or half cent sales tax. Would probably have to be voted on, you know, by the voters, approved by the voters similar to a general obligation bond fund. You know, the condominium conversion fee was what was originally identified and set up as the funding source for the city's housing trust fund. And you know, I'm not sure if that condo conversion fee is still on your code, but you know, if those should come back, that could be a source of funding. So, and you know, there could be other cities have done nexus studies to be able to justify a impact development fee. But you have to do a nexus study to be able to assess the impact that new housing developments are going to have and be able to, you know, justify your impact fee structure. I think San Francisco may have done something to that effect. So those are just a few ideas. And, you know, I think it would probably be, you know, maybe something one of the subcommittees might look at. And, you know, I don't know if the, you know, the city attorney has resources where they could have, you know, a real estate attorney possibly assisting or providing some guidance as you know, the this commission or one of its subcommittees, you know, explores these possibilities. So those are some of my thoughts on that, you know, with regards to the funding.
All right. Good, Liz.
Yeah, so I have a suggestion and a question. My question is, how do we get ballot initiatives regarding sales tax and bonds onto a ballot? Is it something that's community done or put forth by the city?
Mayor and council have to approve it, I believe.
And my other suggestion would be along the lines of a sales tax is what if we suggested a tax for the booking of Airbnbs? There are some communities that have community taxes on Airbnbs as a fee, and these are properties that just are not available for community members most of the year or part of the year that otherwise could just be housing.
I think there's a state preemption on that as well, as far as taxing Airbnbs.
Cool.
Liz, sorry,
should be off on that, but anyway.
Yeah, I still think, even though I know we're not allowed to do it statewide, I still think it's one we should continue to push for at the state legislature. I agree. I think a luxury tax should be a relatively easy concept to sell. I mean, this is luxury. It's extra income people are earning. It's not essential. And yeah, let's use a tax to solve, you know, help solve the problem with this, you know, help the solution is partially solved by the problem, you know. I think that kind of works really nicely. So I really love this idea. But again, I think it's just going to be like, that's like a long-term battle, you know, but I think it's one we should, every time we get state reps here, we should definitely continue to ask for and push for. But I keep wondering about construction sales tax. Like, is there any way, because to me, that's one that's like, Marcos, is that preempted as well?
That's Jim. No, but Jim's going to preempt that.
Why wouldn't you try like a few cents on the dollar? I mean, come on, like, what? It's like, that's a huge money maker for the city.
Don't get me started, Shay. okay. So any other comments?
I want to hear just briefly, Jim, why is this not feasible?
It's construction sales tax is something that we deal with, but you know, on a typical affordable housing project, right now, I would say between state, county, and city sales tax, there's over $1 million between the three. But I can tell you that the city, in large part, typically takes whatever sales tax revenues they generate on affordable housing, and they offer to put those back into the deal for offsite improvements. So that's what I've been seeing with most of the affordable deals. I don't think they do the same thing with the market rate. You know, maybe some of the construction sales tax revenues. I mean, right now construction is going crazy. That's not always going to be the case. So that's, again, not guaranteed.
Well, right. But so you're saying it is already getting factored in. Some of that is already getting factored into some affordable housing projects. Well,
definitely on the affordable housing side. Yeah. So I think that is another way that the city has been really good. I think about trying to reinvest into the projects to make them feasible.
Well, then wouldn't it be fair to ask that from for-profit side? I mean, again, just considering how few and the unwillingness of for-profit developers to build in or put in any affordable housing into their project. I mean, I feel like, I don't know.
It's so it reminds me of something that happened in Santa Fe, where they said every multifamily project had to have an affordability component. So a certain percentage of units had to be earmarked as affordable housing. And guess what happened there? It became harder for projects to pencil out and fewer projects got built and the housing got even less affordable. So, you know, my personal opinion, and I know I'm just one person here, my personal opinion is things that we can do to make it easier to develop, regardless if it's for affordable or not affordable, will help with the supply. And then the supply and demand curve will eventually come into place. And you know, but right now, and especially in Tucson and in Arizona, we have a huge supply problem where there's just not enough housing. And so anything that we can do just to increase the supply of housing will help with the affordability. That's my personal opinion. Maggie, or CJ, I think you were next, and then Maggie. By the way, I like the haircut, CJ.
Thanks, Jim. I mean, I hear what you're saying. The last part, it just feels like a hoping the market will correct itself, which is almost never right, in my opinion. But I just wanted to bring up, this is something that maybe, I don't know if Anne, this isn't fresh in my mind, but I know I was talking to Anne a few months ago about what they're doing in Tempe with their use of a trust fund and how that kind of plays in. I don't know if it's something that is equal to the size of the problem of as far as the housing crisis here, but it's something that I've been trying to keep an eye on. And it's, like I said, it's not fresh in my head, but yeah, I wanted to bring that up and see if Anne or Liz can speak to that. I know that we talked about it months ago and I haven't kept up with it. Yeah, that's all I was going to mention.
Maggie.
So why just go after the, you know, new construction and developers? How about, and I don't know, you know, the laws, but, you know, sales tax on, you know, sales of homes, especially sales of homes to people outside of the city, to all the Californians, all of the investors that are coming in. I'm wondering, you know, and maybe take the approach of a nonprofit, maybe some kind of a campaign to fund it from the public, because if anything, you know, this, the affordable and the housing in general crisis that we're going through right now is hitting everybody. So I think it's actually maybe a good opportunity to kind of just appeal to the public, you know, and maybe it's not enough funds, but, you know, who knows, but it's a way to, you know, I think drive home the fact that, you know, it's the solution. It has to be not just the people that are in this, you know, Zoom, but the community at large has to be involved, I think, to help really resolve this issue.
Okay, Joanna.
Yeah, I just want to say something about the Airbnb and short-term rental tax. I'm trying to rack my brains because I remember at some point I did some research on the preemption that restricts short-term rental and whether a short-term rental tax will be included in that preemption. And I have a feeling that with the interpretation, there was some like possibility and way around it. I mean, certainly the preemption prevents any, you know, municipality from restricting the use of a property for Airbnb, for example. But I feel like there was something around the short-term rental tax. So I just want to mention it. I don't know the answer, but I'm going to dig and come back at the next meeting, hopefully being a bit clearer on this. That's all.
Thank you, Liz.
I want to bring up, it hasn't really been discussed in the commission, but that we're like irrefutably going into a recession. And so I just feel a little bit of concern about possible futility of some of these efforts. Every time there's a recession, people tend to decrease their luxury purchases unless they are someone who is just way more likely to be making those luxury purchases. And by adding taxes on things like home purchases, I do feel concerned that people, just everyday people, are going to be even more kept out of that opportunity, and that the city will just be exacerbating a need for housing by trying to fund housing.
Joanna, do you have another comment?
Oh, no, sorry. I just didn't put my hand down.
Okay, Joe.
Yeah, to Liz's point, one of the things that when we were talking about this in the Affordable Housing Subcommittee, one of the things I brought up was the need to make sure that we're not doing this with regressive taxation. And that's why I have qualms about doing it with sales tax, too. And that if you're going to have a tax, an additional sale or transfer tax, that maybe that can be limited at a certain price point. Or one of the other things I brought up we didn't really get into was it's a huge change to property tax structure, but making that progressive instead of a rate for everyone, just like we have progressive income taxes, that as your property, as the value of your property goes up, that the rate could fluctuate with that too. I don't know that anybody is on board with it. I know that there are places that have it, but keeping that progressive taxation principle in mind, I think is important to speak to kind of what Liz was saying. Thanks.
So I just was, while we were talking, I was trying to do a little bit of research online on what would a tenth of a point in sales tax revenue mean. And the only thing I could find was back in 2017, when there was a half cent increase in the sales tax on the ballot, it was estimated that was going to generate $250 million over 5 years. So if it was a tenth, if assuming that everything stayed the same between now and 2017, if it was a tenth of a point, that would translate to roughly $10 million a year in additional revenues. So, you know, I was thinking of a number less than that, you know, so I don't think we're talking about huge increases to the sales tax if there is one. CJ?
I just also meant to respond to someone asked about putting stuff on the ballot, right? And I think probably a lot of folks here know this, but just in case anyone doesn't, that yes, mayor and council can refer something to the ballot, but people can actually do that as well. It's a lot of work. It's a ton of time and work, but just something that a group of people want to do. We do have the ballot initiative process here, and you have to collect an ungodly amount of signatures to get it on the ballot, but that is something that we do as well.
Okay. So let's, unless there's anything else, I think we should maybe move to the next item. I think there was some really good discussion here, and Shay, I don't know what your thought is, but my opinion is we probably need to flesh this out a little bit more before we make a recommendation.
I think it would be nice to go to Mayor Council with a viable source, you know, that's outlined and, it's hard. It's like, you know, I just always see it as pluses and minuses. It's like, do you tax up front? Do you tax later? You know, are you trying to reduce the cost for the developer? I mean, you know what I'm saying? There's different strategies and way of and ways of thinking about how you make, you know, affordable housing more affordable. And I think making sure that all these things are in alignment, you know, when it comes to taxes, I think it's going to take some time to think about it strategically, you know, and making sure that the pluses and minuses are ending up in a positive direction and not a negative direction. I don't know how else to say it, but, you know, whatever credits are given versus whatever is taxed, there has to be some net positive there, right?
Mark?
Well, to Shay's point, I think these are very complicated issues. And if we look at like the road tax that just got passed, I mean, there was a huge amount of work that went on behind the scenes getting ready for that, that involved conversations with the chamber and the leadership council, I'm sure Saba, those sort of groups. So, I mean, I think if we're really serious about moving in this direction, which honestly, I have some serious concerns about a lot of what Liz said earlier in terms of where we are with inflation and people's concerns in that regard. I think, this is a long-term issue. It's going to take some while to put something like this together. And we have to work with those kind of community groups, especially if we're going to go to the ballot. Because having a fight with a large, well-organized opposition, I think will make it much more difficult. So.
Good comment. Okay. So the next one is to recommend to mayor and council to direct staff to initiate a unified development code audit to identify and improve the barriers to development of the housing continuum through the equity lens. So this is in layman's terms, zoning flexibility for housing. Liz?
I have a question about the unified codes policies or how it's written out regarding like upzoning for mixed use properties and that effect. I don't know anything about it.
Shay, do you know the answer to that?
You mean, in general, like I literally am in the code every day, the Uniform Development Code. And I have to say that I started working in this field with planning first, right? So we were looking at the code then a lot too, right before Tucson switched to the Uniform Development Code. And in that time, the code got way more complicated, way more restrictive. And I would say that in general, there's no way to meet the underlying, there's a ton of conflicts in our code right now. The setbacks alone, like, make it impossible for you to ever reach the maximum underlying density that you're supposedly allowed. It's just really, really tough. Like, and then narrow lots, like, are especially harmed by our setbacks. You have this cone, this triangle that's like a no build zone. And it makes construction more expensive. Like, I have a project right now where the only way we can meet the setbacks is to have the mass of the building in the middle of the lot, and we have to have a hip roof because we have to, and then it's like this pyramid hip roof. It's gonna be, I mean, way more expensive to build than if we could just go straight up, right? Like, and so I think a lot of these decisions were made in my opinion, with concerns from neighborhoods that don't think about the whole continuum of a project. Like, I wish there was a diagram, like, for a building, like a bill on Capitol Hill, like the process for a building from permit to construction. Like, it goes, that little project goes on this like crazy difficult journey that takes years. And so again, the more that we can streamline our code, get rid of the conflicts, make sure that people are able to achieve the underlying density, like, So for most lots, you're technically allowed to build up, which I don't know why we have the open space requirement basically, but it's like most lots you're allowed to build up to 70% of the area. But once you factor in the setbacks, there's no way you can really achieve that. And so, you know, even like, especially again for small lots, there's a ton of small lots in Tucson that are zoned R3. And when you really start to get into the analysis of how you achieve 3 units on those lots, it's really difficult to do. So again, I think that the code just needs to be really cleaned up and made much more simple, easy to use, user-friendly. But yeah, basically when it comes to, and then, yeah, I think that we're in an urban environment and we have kind of a code that's really rural in nature. And so thinking about how are we growing as a city and how do we want our urban environment to be? I think those are really important questions that need to be reevaluated at this point, because infill is really, really hard to do. And if infill is hard to do, that means that sprawl is the alternative, and sprawl is an environmental disaster. Like, we can't keep sprawling. So I think asking the tough questions and trying to figure out with our community what an urban Tucson looks like is like a really, really important piece of reanalyzing the code.
So can I suggest that it be a little bit more specific about what we're trying to bring to Mayor and Council? It sounds like we're trying to look at the ways that the code makes development requirements mutually exclusive and limits that development, like just identifying kind of what we, you know, improving our walkability, reviewing what urbanization looks like for the city, and what community priorities are. Just a suggestion.
Joanna?
Yeah, I just want to add, I mean, I think this is a really important step, but I think it would be really good to see some language or attention specifically about who undertakes or should be undertaking this particular task, especially because, you know, there's a mention of this being done under an equity lens, you know, ensuring that there's a diverse group who's reflective of the Tucson population is really important, but also ensuring that whoever undertakes this, you know, has that buy-in that this is important and understanding of the issues around zoning and the barriers that they present. So I guess I'm saying I'm not too clear on who is being tasked with this, but that's very important.
Yep. Jay?
Yeah, I think this is a great suggestion. Obviously, Shay, you mentioned the connection to equity earlier. This is just a huge equity issue, zoning, and where it came from, the effects it's had, both intended and not. So, yeah, I fully support this. And, you know, I think to Mark's point just a minute ago, I mean, if we really start to look at a lot of these underlying equity issues in the community and really start pushing, we are going to face a huge wall, whether it's from established neighborhoods, whether it's from the development community, real estate agents, what have you, because there is just a ton of vested interest. I mean, this is essentially what our economy is built on in a lot of ways. So, you know, trying to get at some of these things is really going to stir up a hornet's nest. But, you know, I think that's what we need to do. And, you know, not to mention climate change and how we need to be building our city so that we can survive a couple more years, it will be good. So I think this is a great idea. And, you know, again, to Mark's point earlier, and just this whole conversation about equity, you know, we really, really need to involve not just the players and stakeholders, but particularly people whose voices are typically not heard, because the people that will come out against this are the people whose voices are always heard and already have power. And the people who are affected by this are people that don't, and those people don't show up. So, you know, I just think that that's a critical piece of the puzzle as well as we go forward.
So Anne and Liz, this is part of the HAS plan. Actually, the next three are. Do either of you have thoughts or comments on this?
So I'm just looking at it. And I'm going to ask, so this is about develop the incentive program, permitting fast track, and changing
the zoning code.
Yeah. I mean, those are definitely things we've heard that are needed. So as far as a mechanism or how we plan to, you know, getting the commission to say we want to see this done sooner than later, or providing recommendations on how to implement these last three, is kind of where I would ask of the commission.
Okay. Mark?
Let me argue a little bit, or maybe sound like I'm arguing a little bit against what I just said. But I do, as I talk to people in the community, especially about older adult housing affordability, I mean, everybody is talking about, I mean, there's like everybody that I talk to, which is a fairly broad spectrum, understands the issue and is concerned about it. And so on one sense, I think we really are, there really is, I think, a groundswell of concern about old, well, I mean, the issue I work on is older adult stuff, but, you know, I mean, I run into people in bars, you know, older women talking about how their landlord, where they live for 8 years, have just kicked them out. You know, I mean, basically they've jacked up their rents and told them to leave, and they're not going to renew their leases, all of that sort of stuff. So the thing which is vexing for me is production just takes a long time. And so how do we respond to that quickly? I think, but I do think I think there probably is an opportunity. We have goodwill out there, I guess I would say, that we maybe that could be mobilized for some sort of a campaign if we can move fairly quickly, I would think.
Shay?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge task. And I just keep thinking, you know, as far as who takes it on, from what my understanding was that what Sarah mentioned in the last meeting was that this is something that's kind of already on the radar for planning and development service staff. That's something that they were kind of planning on doing. But I think, I don't know, for me, just the little the little dip I've had in so far into trying to take on any zoning issues is that we really do need a broad stakeholder group. And I think that it has to be interdepartmental. Like, you can't just have planning there. You absolutely, like, development services was not present in a lot of the conversations we had with the Casita Amendment. They absolutely have to be present, because the way that the code ultimately gets interpreted is by development services, and they're approving or denying your permit. So to not have them in the room, to me, was a huge lesson learned, as well as community members, and as well as, like, the equity department. And once we have this equity framework, like, how do we view it from that lens? And so, again, I think it's one of these, again, just huge, huge, huge tasks. In addition, Marcos has mentioned the need for, you know, once there is some sort of consensus arrived at, you know, the need for marketing and that engagement with the public to make sure that they've bought in, because I feel like there's just a lot of fear right now. What I sense from just the small little Casita Amendment, the fear is greater than the solution, and people's fear of developers taking advantage of anything that's easier to build or quicker to build, that fear seems to generally override any concerns about or benefits that people could perceive from, like, actually, like, building and construction used to happen by mostly local folks, and mostly local folks used to participate in this. And over time, that relationship, those people who were able to do this, to me, has eroded because of how partially how complicated our zoning system is. So, again, I think that there would just be, it's going to be tough. I just think it's going to be really, really tough.
Liz.
Is this something that we could begin to kind of distill into more concrete and actionable priorities and goals by having possibly a special group or session that meets on some sort of basis regarding this topic? That would be my suggestion.
Yep. Okay, any other thoughts or comments on this next item? Okay, the third item is for the HAS plan. CEHD recommends the Mayor and Council to direct staff to develop a citywide affordable housing development incentive program containing a menu of options, including a density bonus in lieu of fees. So this, I believe, would be done by HCD, correct?
We certainly can. And I think Sarah's on here, or Anne. I want to see if you guys had any thoughts about approach on this.
Yeah. So, and I would also invite Corin. So this would be in conjunction with PD planning and development services in terms of looking at something really similar to what the city of Flagstaff has done, which is really create this menu of incentives and things like parking relief if you're building affordable housing. And so essentially creating a menu of options. If you're creating X number of housing for X AMI, you potentially get these options over here. So a few different cities have done it, something we're interested in doing together with planning and development services, since a lot of this goes through their shop. One thing I'll mention too on the last item, and I think these go hand in hand, thinking about the Unified Development Code and thinking about incentives, is that I would see a group like Eco Northwest. We hire, they're an affordable, they look at, they're an economic consultant company that specializes in things like affordable housing and transportation, where they've seen how these types of incentive programs have worked in many other communities, and they've seen other communities that have tried it and they haven't worked. And so things like looking at our code and or creating incentives, I think having help from folks that have really seen this across the nation in terms of what works and what doesn't work would be a key step for us in this.
Liz?
Is this something that developers would be able to use in places where there are already incentive programs like GIPLIT or GPLIT, I don't know how it's pronounced, and the Central Business District and places like that? Or would it be considered like an either or situation?
I can pipe in on this one because it's tough for a GIPLIT to work with a tax credit project because the entity that uses the tax credits has to be the owner of the property. And I think for a GIPLIT, the Rio Nuevo needs to own it. And then there's a buyback after a certain amount of time. So from a tax credit perspective, no, but if they're going with, if they don't have a tax credit project, then they probably could use both.
Yeah. And just to add a little bit to that, and Anne's description, I think what we're really looking at is zoning incentives that, yes, would be layered with financial incentives and meant to complement each other. But I think both of these points are really focused on zoning. So the actual land use policy and development parameters for affordable housing.
Really, and the third one also is kind of along the same lines, mm-hmm. which is the fast track through the permitting process. Any other comments or thoughts on these next two? Okay, so the last one was really kind of my thing that I was harping on, which was I think Jason Heise had some really good statistics, but Tucson and surrounding communities have roughly 14%, I think, of the state population, and we're not getting 14% of the low-income housing tax credits. And so we want to start being the squeaky wheel with everybody at the state so that they don't forget about us down here. So I think my suggestion is, Shay, just in the interest of time, we've got some work to do on these to continue to vet these out. I think we should not do anything right now, but let's see if we can come back with more information in the next month or the following month. And at that point, hopefully we'll be ready to finalize the recommendations. Do you agree?
Yeah. There's lots of questions.
Any other comments or thoughts on agenda item number 6? Okay, number 7, discussion about housing and related issues and informational presentations, particularly if they don't require. Is that the same thing, Nesto? I guess I missed that on my review.
No, I'm sorry. I think Jay wanted that on the agenda. Jay?
Oh, is this Jay's?
Yeah, it's something I brought up. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm having some issues with my camera, but I am still here. So one of the things that we talked about a lot in our most recent subcommittee meeting, really maybe the last two, is just our frustration with how the committee meetings, our overall commission meetings are going. And of course, today it's gone very differently, which is, I think, what we have all been wanting. But basically, we were wanting to ask that the informational presentations be limited during the commission meetings, unless there are things that that the commission is being asked to take action on. You know, I think we feel like we need to be having these conversations like we're having today. And I think we were also thinking about, you know, as we move forward, what do our meetings look like? So, I mean, in some sense, just because of, you know, how today's meeting has gone and, you know, us having spent, you know, the bulk of it actually talking about housing issues, this feels a lot more like, I think, what we all had been wanting. So I know that that had come up in our subcommittee meeting a couple of times, and I think I've heard a couple of other people mention that as well. So, you know, we can talk about it if other people have, you know, some thoughts about that, or, you know, maybe just a time to talk about how our meetings are structured and what we're trying to accomplish during our commission meetings going forward. So, you know, if we want to table that until next meeting, I know we've been having a good discussion so far today. I don't want to take up time if that's not where people's heads are at, but that's what this agenda item is about nonetheless.
Well, I'm not going to make excuses or justify what, you know, I think that's happened, but I do think that as a commission, we're maturing, and you know, there is a learning curve that we've all been going through as we get to know each other and try to get our hands around what we're supposed to do. And so I think we're kind of feeling our way through. And I agree with you, Jay, that that discussions like we had today that are more action oriented are going to be beneficial for this commission. So I don't see us reverting back, I guess, is all I'm trying to say. Liz?
Yeah, I think it's about balance, and I do think that there are commission members who, you know, depending on what the presentation, I think those can be super useful. But what I'm hearing you say, Jay, is just you know, what presentations are, you know, applicable and relevant, especially to, you know, maybe particular actions or topics we're trying to learn more about. And for instance, just around housing trust funds, is there any potential presentation that could really help inform us? So, but it really is, I agree with you, Jim, that this has really been about what can benefit the commission to help moving everyone in the direction that's needed. So good feedback, but I do think having a balance of that is what's needed.
Vicki?
Yeah, I would just like to add, when we talked about this during the subcommittee meeting, I find it difficult at times to continually cross-reference what we're talking about in presentations to the goals and mission that we've approved. And I just would like to see us tie back to those more often. I have to open those documents every single time we have a meeting. And honestly, there are times when there have been presentations where I have a difficult time relating them to that mission and those specific goals. And I think it would be really helpful if we did that more often.
Feedback. Anybody else? Okay, next agenda item is agenda item number 8, HCD updates.
I can start, and then Anne, or anyone, Netho, if there's anything I missed, please jump in. So I wanted to share that, talking about presentations, I'm suggesting and making a recommendation that at our next meeting, we talk about the opening of the wait list. And that's going to be a pretty big effort. One of the things I want to do between now and our next meeting is to work with Jay and Vicki and our own Office of Equal Opportunity around what our opening of the waitlist looks like, at, you know, ensuring access for persons with disabilities, persons with limited English proficiency, ensuring that our process is fair and equitable. So my goal and hope, if the commission will allow me, is to have us talk about that waitlist opening. My thought is it would open early September is kind of the time frame that we're thinking about, but making sure there's a significant outreach. But I wanted to kind of give everyone that heads up that that is coming soon, and want to do that in a collective way and in partnership with all, with our, not just the commission members, but our nonprofits that serve the community. Also wanted to share that this coming Tuesday, we'll be meeting with Mayor and Council, doing a presentation around eviction moratorium that's been in place for our public housing. The moratorium for the public housing and housing owned by the city was through June 30th. So either the mayor council will want to extend it or lift it. My recommendation will be to lift it for a variety of reasons, but you know, mainly because there's really not a need for an eviction moratorium because it's public housing. We're able to adjust rents based on income. And also we're seeing a drop in our rent collection. So we need to ensure that we're, for the purpose of running the public housing properly, is to ensure that we're collecting the rent. So that's gonna happen on Tuesday. If anyone has any questions on that, I'm happy to answer that.
Liz Wilson?
The lifting of that moratorium would result in the city collecting late fees on people who haven't been making those payments.
So we haven't been assigning any late fees. So if it's lifted, we would say that beginning August 1st for any new rent that's not paid. So August 1st and going forward, then late fees would apply, but we are not applying any late fees to any rents that were owed during the moratorium. Our goal is to anyone that does have a balance is to work with them to get a payment agreement. Eviction would be the last recourse if we can't get any, you know, the resident to cooperate or communicate with us after multiple attempts.
And do you know those rent arrears, would it be for like a specific period of time, like the last 12 months, or would it be for the entire period that they haven't been paying rent when the moratorium's been in effect?
So the time period that is March of 2020 through July 31st, that is the time period we'll be working on doing a payment arrangement going forward.
And one last question. Do you guys feel like you have adequate staff to be either doing retroactive adjustments on whatever their income percentage is for rent or working on those payment plans, adjusting accounting, that sort of thing?
So yes, we definitely have the staff. We've done a lot of payment adjustments already or rent adjustments based on people losing income. Our assumption is the ones that are currently in arrears, it could be just not related to income change, but just failure to pay. But we'd, many of the ones that as throughout this period, when we knew people weren't paying, we would engage, help them. Some of them got assistance through the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. That did say, I need help, we worked with them. So I don't think it's going to be a major ordeal. It's just a matter of just trying to engage and get, and our hope is that now if these residents are paying because they know we won't evict, if they know that we can, that they'll work with us. And that's all we want.
I do have one more question. I'm sorry. It is, do you have any sort of estimate or idea of how many people will face eviction because of failure to pay?
So my estimate is zero, but what we have is 190 people that we have identified as being in arrears, and some of it could be very, very low amount. Some might be have more significant. I'm asking for a list to understand the range. I know the total dollar amount, which is 130,000, is what's currently owed during that period of time. So the good thing is I don't expect evictions. It will be after, if it is anyone that is just completely not engaging, not talking, and we've made multiple attempts. But at this point, I have no idea if that's the case once people know the eviction moratorium is lifted.
Thank you.
So stand by on the wait list conversation. I would like to see I do want to get a little bit of feedback, Jim, on if people want to hear about the wait list opening at the next meeting. And so that way we can prepare for that. Regardless of a presentation or not, we will share the information on the wait list opening with the commission. And after we've received the consultation of the agencies and partners that I mentioned to make sure we're in a good place to release that. My last update is this happened since the last meeting. We did hire and have a new administrator. His name's Donald Paredes. He is now over responsible for the public housing and Section 8 programs, and he reports to Terry Galligan. And so Donald comes to us from the City of Glendale Housing and Community Development. And so he has over 20 years of experience working with public housing authorities. So hopefully you'll get to meet him here soon. But he is now part of our team. And that is my update.
Great. Nesto or Ann, any things you want to add?
No, I'm sorry, Jim. I don't have anything right now.
Jim, just the one real quick, since the last meeting, Mayor and Council approved our Thrive expansion effort in terms of replicating what we did in Thrive in the O5. We'll be focusing on Thrive on 29th Street. I believe we mentioned it last time, so I won't go into more information except to say that know, is part of that really working to looking to work with residents and organizations that are within the area. And also we're creating a steering committee to help oversee the efforts. So it's a joint leadership model. And with that, you know, if there are organizations that people are aware of that you feel like we should reach out to, again, the parameters are Elvernon to Craycroft is the east-west, 22nd Street to Golf Links. And so the East 29th Street area is where this will be, and thinking about better housing, better neighborhoods, better economic development opportunities for residents in the area, reducing crime, increasing quality of life, all of those things.
Great. Any questions for HCD? Joanna.
Yeah, I have a question. Liz, I know we spoke a while ago about source of income discrimination protection. Is there going to be any action on that now this session is ended at the legislature?
Thanks, Joanna. I was debating whether to talk about that. I did reach out to Ben. We have some progress on that as far as a potential time frame. My hope is we're going to have an opportunity for public comment on a potential ordinance, but I'm also working with Arizona Multi-Housing Association on their input and potential partnership. So what we hope to do is get it out for public comment. I don't have a date yet of when it will be posted. We again, this will be something we want the commission to be aware of when it's going to be open for public comment, and also a couple of public meetings so we can have people provide input. And if we go to mayor and council, I'm estimating right now second meeting in September, but it's not in stone yet. But it has that is kind of what we're shooting for. So definitely, you know, something that's going to require a lot of talking, a lot of input from people, and we'll want the commission to weigh in again. Whether it's individually with the mayor and council or as a group, but we'll definitely include you all as we roll this out.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Our next meeting is August 4th. So Liz had a suggested agenda item for our next meeting, which was the wait list. And I don't fully understand what that means, Liz, but is how do the rest of the commissioner members feel about adding that onto the agenda next meeting? Yes. Anybody, let me ask a question a different way. Anyone opposed? Wendy?
No, I'm definitely in favor of that being on the agenda and knowing where things are, especially in terms of incentives for potential landlords.
Okay. Okay, so good. Let's Ernesto, let's put that on our agenda.
We'll do.
For next month. Any other agenda items that, besides the ones we talked about today that we want to add? Okay, well, it is 5:56. One thing I just wanted to mention before we adjourn is the Arizona Housing Conference is going to be held August 18th and 19th in Scottsdale this year. It rotates back and forth between Tucson and Phoenix. This year it's in Phoenix. If any of you are interested in participating, I think it's a good conference. And almost everybody in the affordable housing business is there. Okay, let's adjourn. Thank you, everyone. I think this was a good meeting today.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
It's sold out? Really? I did not know.